This week on Not Just A Geek, we're looking at X-Men 97's first five episodes and diving into why this series has us all captivated. Now, without further ado, let me talk at you. Let me talk at ya. Welcome one and all to Not Just A Geek, the show about the how, what, and why of the stories we love. I'm your host, Not Just A Guy, the guy, Garrett Briones. Thank you so much for joining me again for another edition of Not Just A Geek, or for joining the show for the very first time. Here on Not Just A Geek, we look at the stories that, that we come back to week, whether that's movies, comics, TV, games, all these things. And as a storyteller, I love talking about the stories that other people have told and what they mean to me and why we love these dang things. You know what I mean? And this week, been very busy. I literally can't even talk. Trying to find time for stories when I can. You know, working two jobs. It's been I commend everybody who has worked two jobs, worked three jobs, worked four jobs for years on end. I've only been doing it for going on 3 months now. Actually, yeah, it's about 3 months. Looking at the day I'm recording, it's been rough. It has been extremely rough. I am so tired as I talk about this right now. But that's more of a, I've been talking about this a lot on our flagship show, Not Just A Guy, which update on Not Just A Guy. The last couple episodes have had some the audio sounds like a garbage disposal. It sounds like I recorded it in a garbage disposal. I had a mic I was using for those on the go episodes on my drive to work. You know, I like those mics, but they can get blown out a little easy. But I have invested some funds into a more compact, higher quality mic that I'm going to start using should I continue to do episodes in the car. Especially, if, I think, for Not Just A Guy, that's just, it's kind of perfect for that show to have that. So look out for any episodes from the car. They should sound better now. Very much enjoying how that show has felt. I think we are kind of, we're cultivating something, we're building something. I think there, I don't know why, but I feel like there's some momentum building for both this show and in our other show, Not Just A Guy. What stories have been my safe havens amidst the onpour of work? Let's see, comics. I'm always reading comics and really enjoying Beneath the Trees Where No One Sees. It's a very good book. I almost don't want to tell you anything about it, just that you need to read it. That was recommended to me by my friend Julian, and I thank him. I'm very much enjoying that. Really enjoyed the first issue of Feral. That one's very good. Still loving the Ultimate Universe and the Energon Universe. Excited to see where those stories are going as more titles are added to each of those imprints. Right now I'm reading Children of Dune. Very much. It's only in the first 150 or so pages. I think I stopped on like page 125 or something like that. I think that's where I got to at the time of the recording. Very much enjoying it. I finally read start to finish Dune last year in 2023. I had started reading it before I moved, and so before I moved down at the end of 2021, I got it for Christmas. I'm trying to say. And I started reading it before I moved in 2022, and so it just kind of fell by the wayside. Some other things popped up before it, so I finally finished reading Dune last year. I also read Dune Messiah last year, and so this year is most likely going to be Children of Dune and God Emperor of Doom. Dune, not Doom. God Emperor Doom, if you've read Marvel's Secret Wars by Jonathan Hickman and Assad Ribic, that little reference, a little homage right there. Very much enjoying it so far, like our two leads. I'm excited to get more and more into the weird stuff of the Duneverse. I'm excited to keep getting into the weird corners. I know what one of the main characters becomes, and so I'm excited to get to that point in the story. Let the story tell me how we get there, because when you just hear about it, you're kind of like, what? My intent is to read all six of the Frank Herbert written Dune books. So Dune, Dune Messiah, Children of Dune, God Emperor of Dune, Heretics of Dune, and Chapter House Dune. I plan to read all of them, all six of his books, because I enjoy the universe, because I enjoy the characters, the ideas, the themes, and also just to help me as I'm developing ideas and developing, pulling inspiration and just watching someone continue to add layers to a world. It's why I continue to watch Star Wars, it's why I try and read so much about George Lucas's process on creating the stories. I have the Star Wars archive books of the original trilogy. Like Target had a version where they broke it up into three individual little books, and it's like a nice little set. I'm hoping that there is a Star Wars archive books for the prequel. There is a Star Wars archive book for the prequels, and I'm hoping that they make the individual smaller one for the prequels, because I would very much like that. But yeah, that's that. I'm still playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Took a little bit of a break. I put in like 35 hours, so I was like, I'm going to take a little bit of a break. And my next game that I play will probably be Fallout 4, and that is because I am in love with the Fallout series. At the time of recording, I'm still working my way through it, but two of my best friends, Andrew and Tristan, have always been fans of Fallout. I actually watched Andrew play Fallout 3, like I watched it over his shoulder. Not that I never wanted to play the games, I just other things, there's a lot of stuff out there, and there's only going to be more stuff out there. But I really was excited for the show because of the creative team, because of the actor, the actors in it. And so I sat down and watched it, and I love it. I love the world. I love the characters. I love what we're playing with as far as ideas. And I'm just so in it that I want to go back and play. At the very least, I'm going to play Fallout 4 and see about playing some of the other games in the series. I'm also going to be replaying the Ultimate Alliance and Ultimate Alliance 2. Those are two superhero games, Marvel Comics. I love those games. I actually went home and got my 360 from, I visited my family and I got my 360 out of storage. So I'm excited to dive back into those games and revisit my childhood. But you know what? Let's stop all this dilly-dallying, okay? So those are the stories that have been getting me through, been fueling me. As I work on my own stories, I will talk about that more on next week's episode of Not Just A Guy, which will most likely, assuming my schedule is going well, I will most likely be talking about, I'm wrapping up the first script I've written in a while, and it took me a long while to write it. So I'm probably, it's another audio drama script, so I'm probably just going to be talking about, last week I talked about getting complacent versus getting comfortable, and I think this week I'm going to be talking, I talked a little bit about like scheduling things out, and I'm going to kind of talk about my current approach to writing and where I'm at with that, I talked about finding the time for your creative endeavors, and now I'm trying to talk, I want to talk a little bit about, when is the best time to slot your creative endeavors in, and when do your creative endeavors kind of suffer from just life and energy levels and things like that. I think I'm going to probably talk about something like that. A lot of Not Just A Guy, the beauty of it is it just kind of comes out however I'm feeling at the moment. So I don't try and put too hard of a stamp on what it's going to be. But that's most likely what that's going to be. But let's get to this week's discussion. I'm so excited to get into the how, what, and why of this. Folks, we're talking X-Men 97. How did we get here? Okay, well, there was a series. There's these characters called the X-Men, right? Marvel Comics. Very, very popular. One could argue at many times have been the most popular Marvel characters. I know so many people in life, in podcast, like that I listen to on podcasts that you just hear like the X-Men were their entryway, whether it was the 90s animated series, whether it was Chris Claremont's long run on the book, whether it was when Jim Lee came on to do the art in the 90s. X-Men are very, very popular. And so we're going to do a two-pronged how did we get here? How did we get here for this series? And how did I get here as an X-Men fan? So when I was a kid, I love Marvel and DC. I would say it's like, maybe it's not 50-50, but maybe it's like 60-40. Like, I just, sometimes I lean a little more Marvel heavy. I pick up more Marvel books most, like, when I really think about it. Marvel, like, and for me, it's always been like Spider-Man. Spider-Man's my guy. Like, he was obviously my entryway, but I was always a big fan of Wolverine as well. And so, you know, I get into Wolverine, I learn about him, and that kind of gets me to the X-Men. And I more so started with the X-Men animated series. My personal X-Men animated series was X-Men Evolution. Like, that was my, to this day, I still love that series. I recommend that series to people trying to get into the X-Men. I think it's just a wonderful reinvention and modernization, especially just the way that it has some characters in high school. Obviously, the X-Men are gifted youngsters when they first start. They're a group of younger, you know, like the original five are younger at the time. They're teenagers. And so I thought that was a cool idea to put a lot of them in high school and really focus on the school aspect and the fitting in and the being outliers of society, especially because you feel those things already as a teen. So imagine that amplified when people find out you're a mutant and you're also a superhero. And I love that series. And so that was a series that was around when I was a kid. And there's also Wolverine and the X-Men, which I only had one season. I did enjoy that series, but that series is very, as many adaptations are, very Wolverine heavy, which, look, I love Wolverine, right? But I think some adaptations kind of suffer when you so solely focus on one singular character, like, especially when you have such a sprawling. I'm actually looking right to my left. I have two monitors. My left monitor is literally an X-Men wallpaper. It's some of the promotional art for Powers of 10 and House of X and Powers of 10, which were the 2019 relaunch, the books that relaunched the X-Men line. And I'm looking at it, and there's just so many X-Men characters. And too often, because Wolverine is the most popular, you know, like mainstream popular, adaptations focus a lot on him. And I think that that can be a disservice to a lot of the other characters, because a lot of the other characters are as strong, and you could argue stronger than Wolverine as far as what you can do with them. And so those were kind of my things. And then I watched the movies. I would say I think I watched the movies for the first time probably when I was eight or nine. And I kind of like started, like, I think I started with Last Stand, and then I got X2, and then I got X-Men. But I'm, you know, not to get too in the weeds with that, but that was kind of how my X-Men fandom started. I picked up more of the comics. I watched them. I always look forward to the movies, look forward to them popping up in animated series. There was a little bit of time where they were kind of, the spotlight wasn't on them due to rights things. And then in 2019, they really came back in full force at being a fixture, a main fixture of the Marvel Universe in the spot where they rightfully deserved. I've loved the Krakoa era comics. I've kept up with them. You know, there's a lot, and I was, you know, back home for a lot of the, you know, first few years of Krakoa, so it was hard to keep up. So a lot of it I've had to read in trades, and even right now the Krakoa era is coming to a close, so I'm still catching up on certain series I've been behind on. I'm actually looking forward to the relaunch that's happening, mostly just because I like the creative teams. I am really sad to see the Krakoa era, and try saying Krakoa 1,000 times, okay? Eventually, you're going to slip up. But yeah, I am sad to see it go. All this to say, I am a fan of X-Men across the board in every medium. And then we get to X-Men the Animated Series, which was before my time. But, you know, I say that, and I my Spider-Man series when I grew up, my first Spider-Man series was Spider-Man the Animated Series, like the 90s series. That was also my thing. So I was aware of X-Men the Animated Series. I watched the episode where they showed up in Spider-Man with, you know, the little crossovers. But I kind of missed the boat on it. I saw a few, like, you know, when I was a kid, they would air some of them at certain times. And so I saw a couple episodes. But I never sat down and fully watched it, you know, and I always was aware of the song and things like that. But I guess I never had that nostalgia that people that grew up in the 90s had for it, right? If, you know, Spider-Man the Animated Series, sure, I have the nostalgia for that, but not necessarily X-Men the Animated Series. And all the things I gravitated to in the X-Men were later things, right? And so when this series was announced, I was like, oh, okay, that'll be kind of cool, you know, like, people that want that back will have that back, and it will be, interesting. And so then I watched all of X-Men, the animated series. I did enjoy it. You know, obviously there are probably parts that are dated, but the themes and the ideas aren't, you know, people being outcast from society and being pushed aside and being stepped on. Those are things that don't age, you know. Animation may age, things like that, jokes or any kind of like, hip lingo at the time, those things age, but the heart and what the series is trying to impart upon the viewer, those things don't age. And so I watched those, but in the lead up to X-Men 97, as it was getting closer and closer, I was getting very excited. You know, I don't watch trailers, but I saw what the animation style looked like, and I was like, that looks really crisp and clean. And I like the, you know, the aspect ratio they're choosing. And I like, you know, I love that they got as many of the original cast that they could get back as possible. And, you know, and then they found other people to fill in the roles that needed filling. And I got to say, you know, when I sat down and watched I carved out time to be able to watch the 2-episode premiere. I knew I had work. So I watched one before I went to work, I believe. And then I watched the other immediately when I got home. And folks, I absolutely freaking adore this series. You think, and I saw this sentiment online that so many people just thought this was just gonna be a nostalgia cash grab, like this was just gonna be playing the hits, and it was just gonna be a direct continuation, which it is story wise but I think that there's so much that is done that I don't want to work. Like, there's a maturation. This series has grown up with its viewers, you know? It still is accessible for kids, but also it is a piece of media that you can show them, a piece of art that you can show them that could maybe illustrate to them, like, you know, everything isn't always sunshine and roses, you know? There is going to be triumph, but there's going to be a lot of tragedy in the world, and we'll get to that. Look, I'm going to be as spoiler-free as I can, but I'm going to be talking very, very openly about some things that happen. And I'm not going to necessarily, I might kind of broadly go episode by episode, but we'll see how we get there. The what? So what is this series about? Well, it is basically the fifth season of, or sixth season, I can't remember off the top of my head. It just continues off the story of X-Men the Animated Series. It picks up where Charles Xavier is gone, and the X-Men have to step up, and they have to kind of fight for his dream. But how do you necessarily fight for someone else's dream? And especially when that person isn't there, and they're, you know, not boots on the ground, they're not in it, and you're still getting all the hate and the flack. And so they're kind of trying to figure that out. And before they really can, you know, they get into a good groove, Magneto shows up and reveals that Charles Xavier left everything to him. So now he kind of runs the X-Men. And so that's got everybody on, you know, their feet, you know, like, or like on the back foot, essentially, because it's like, well, we fought you for, you know, X amount of time, and now we're just expected to stand shoulder to shoulder with you. And we don't know if our view of, you know, how mutants are going to find their place in the world really lines up with Magneto's, because Magneto has tried some pretty dastardly things to do it, but because it's what makes sense to him, he the world needs someone, they need someone with his conviction, but not necessarily the way he goes about things. But Magneto is sort of on his own path, trying his best to no longer go down the path of just pure violence. And so I thought the premiere was a great way to get us back in. You have the X-Men versus the Sentinels, which is always, you know, it's classic X-Men. I thought it was a great way to get us back into this world and really just get us off to the races. And then immediately pull the rug out, story-wise, by having Magneto show up and be like, yeah, well, you guys are kind of working together now, and that's great and awesome, but I'm actually in charge. This is actually, I'm running this now, and Charles left it to me. So we get to the second episode, and we have, you know, the mutants are, you know, the X-Men are trying to appeal on the behalf of mutants again, and you know, Magneto is standing trial for what he's done in the past, because, you know, you can't just really just put on a new suit and expect everybody to forget what you've done. You know, Magneto doesn't need forgiveness, but he does need to, you know, because he doesn't necessarily, he doesn't want forgiveness for what he did, but he has to, he realizes that there is some, he has, if he wants to fight this fight, he is going to have to play ball. He's going to have to let them know he feels something. And in the same episode, we have Scott and Jean's son being born, Nathaniel. And it really is like, it kind of crystallizes what they're fighting for. They are fighting for this next generation, maybe not even necessarily their generation, but they are fighting for these children that are further born into this world that just treats them like absolutely nothing. And it robs them of their ability to live their lives on their own terms. And that is what the X-Men are fighting for. And Magneto ultimately kind of, you know, he makes a very declarative statement, you know, at the expense, after they are attacked by the Executioner, who is a human who does this, who causes this, it does an act of terrorism, and doesn't, like, the X-Men are the ones who are there on peaceful terms, and for someone to show up and commit this act of what it is domestic terrorism. It shows you, like, why are they being vilified when someone is doing this horrific thing because they are so worried about, you know, he goes on this tirade and kind of talks about how, like, you know, we got problems too, but we don't complain about them. And I can't tell you how many times I've seen people say that in the real world. And I'm like, just shut up. Like, dude, you don't have to complain about them because you're not the one who's getting put into a hole in the ground because you're trying to live your life the way you want to live it. Like, this show is striking such a strong chord. And I think it is just so, and you see it in the response that it's getting. It's just, this show so expertly knows what the X-Men are across every age, but also what they need to be in the now, and how the use of X-Men as an allegory works for so many groups, and works across so many ages, and works across it worked in the 90s, and it works now, because in many ways it's very sad that it still works now, because these groups and these people who feel like they're on the fringes of society for just living, it really strikes a chord. And so then as we move on, we get episode 3, which is which I almost want to talk about in the sense of adaptation and compartmentalization, I guess, and condensing. It's a very quick adaptation of the X-Men story Inferno. I have not read Inferno, but I know of it. And it introduces, you know, full-blown introduces Madeline Pryor, who is the clone of Jean Grey. I thought it was expert. People are talking a lot about how this show is rushing through stories that they could spend a whole season on. And I guess I would feel that way if it wasn't doing it so well, because this show is doing it so expertly I think it is taking what is needed, and it is making that the central drive of an episode. And yeah, sure, could we have had like a whole season that was Inferno and that whole saga? Yes, but it's working within the overarching story of the season that they're trying to tell. And so I don't have a problem with them doing a lot of stories, you know, because the opposite of that is there are many things in the streaming verse that they will take us one story and they will stretch it sometimes beyond its natural length or its natural moment, like the momentum that would naturally build. They kind of stretch it past that, and it sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I think the show has, it's maintained because it is whittling these stories down to their bare bones, most important details, and what is the thrust and drive of them and what they mean to these characters, the emotion. It's making it work, and it is making it. That's what's making it work for me. It is maybe you know, it is taking these stories down to their core and focusing on why they are important, you know? Episode 4 was kind of like a half and half. It was I really enjoyed Jubilee and Roberto da Costa's story, and I really enjoy their dynamic together. And then also focusing on Storm, who early in the season, because of the Executioner, lost her touch with her powers. You know, had this person literally strip her of something that is so integral to her identity and her life up to that point. And I'm enjoying seeing the beginning of her relationship with Forge and how he feels guilty over what because he contributed to the very thing that took her abilities from her, and she kind of views it as him trying to, you know, she's like something he's trying to fix because he's always trying to fix things, and she's valid in thinking that because that kind of is what he's doing. Yes, he has sort of fallen in love with her and he has feelings for her now, but he did contribute to a weapon that is being used against mutants, and he is one of them. I'm very excited to see where that story goes with Storm. Storm's one of my favorite X-Men. She's one of the best. She's just one of the best Marvel characters in general. I'm rereading / finishing up X-Men Red by Al Ewing and a litany of fantastic artists. Among them, one of my favorites, Stefano Caselli. And I'm reading that right now. And I love how Al Ewing writes Storm. If you want a great Storm story, I highly recommend reading X-Men Red. I would start with Sword, then read X-Men Red. And then that is concluding that sort of thread of Storm is concluding it just concluded in Resurrection of Magneto. Spoilers, I guess, for that particular comic. But I want to get to episode 5. Episode 5 of X-Men 97, full spoilers, one of the most impactful just things I've watched in general. I was going to say, like, as far as adaptations go, like, one of the most impactful, one of the most, just, it hit me. My girlfriend, she's my fiance. She doesn't even watch the show, but she was in the room when I was watching it the morning it dropped, and even she was like, holy crap, like, that was really sad. And it ties into this idea, you know, Genosha is this mutant island, this place where the mutants can go have their own society, culture, all these various things. And this, it's kind of sad that it has to get to that point of, well, we can't live peacefully and integrate, so we have to just kind of go off on our own. And even then, that's not good enough for these people that have vilified us and pushed us to the outside, that they still will come after us. They're just going to use that as a target, you know? And you have Magneto who just keeps fighting and trying to prove, like, okay, I've changed, all right? And it's like, well, maybe he was right the whole time, because... And even Scott Summers talks about it on the news. It's like, we do so much for you guys. We fight for you. Some of us, you know, die. Some of the X-Men die, you know, in the comics and the movies, all these things. They die for mankind. They do all these things, and they are still treated awfully. They are treated like they're nothing. They are treated like monsters. And yet they put on their boots every single day, and they go out and they fight for them, because that's who they are. And you just see, and it's so evocative of so many tragedies. You know, it is based on an X-Men story from Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely's New X-Men. That's another one I'm actually hoping this year to get the omnibus of that and read that. Maybe if there's something I find in that, I could talk about that on the show. But it obviously adapts that, because in that series, Genosha is devastated, and Genosha is a huge part of X-Men, I guess, lore. Like, I knew about Genosha because before I knew it was like a story in New X-Men, it's referenced in a lot of things. It's the destroyed Genosha is like the main setting of the Deadpool game from 2013, and they mentioned, like, yeah, this is supposed to be a safe haven for mutants, and then humans had to go and be dickheads and come and just devastate the place. And so I knew about that, but yes, it's adapting that, but also it is evocative of so many tragedies and so many seemingly, like, I hate how it's evocative of those things, and it just reminds you of, like, all the headlines and just all the headlines and blurbs you hear on the news, or, you know, you see in a story of just people trying to be themselves and try and, you know, we only got one shot on this big blue marble. And it just reminds you, like, there are just people that are out there that are truly vile and evil, and they will ruin people's lives, or they will take their lives just because they want a chance at living the way that they want to, being their true selves. People shouldn't have to change or hide who they are to have a shot at living. You know, watching this, like, it hits so hard. Not only because we care so much about these characters, Gambit, Rogue, Magneto, Nightcrawler, it hurts because it's like, this happened. This is sadly something that happens so often. And it's just, it's horrifying when you remember, like, this hurts because, you know, it hurts seeing Gambit get hurt. It hurts seeing Nightcrawler get hurt. It hurts seeing Magneto, you know, clutching onto a child and trying to protect them from just being obliterated and telling them to don't be afraid. And then it hurts because you think about how many other people have had to hold a child and tell them don't be afraid. And that really, that's why art matters. And, you know, you could say, oh, that's just a television show for kids. Shut up. Turn around. Get out of here. I don't know why you're in the studio. Get out of here. But no, seriously, we need stories like this in every medium, because animation is a medium. It is not just something for kids. Yes, it's easy for kids to watch, as for, you know, animated series and things like that. But we need this. We need it in every kind of every medium of art to remind us, like, you know, yes, these are people in colorful suits and with superpowers, but we gravitate to these stories because they shed light on something in society and shed light on what we're facing in the world. And that's why they mean anything to us. I also forgot to intro that was the why. That's why we need this. Like, that is why this show is hitting so hard. I adore it. I'm so sad that we only have 5 episodes left before we have to wait for another season. It makes me happy to know that they already are working on season 2 and they have plans for season 3, because I will watch whatever they want to do. I'm loving it. And it really is hitting, you know, beyond. It's just, I love seeing the hype for X-Men, and I think this is one of the best ways the X-Men, for me personally, this and X-Men Evolution are my favorite adaptations of the X-Men, bar none. X-Men Evolution, I love, and it just shows, for me, I think not only do the X, I made like a tweet or a thread about this, I think it was a tweet, I don't know. Not only do I think that the X-Men are well served by animation because of how you can depict their abilities, I think that they are so well served by shows, by, you know, week to week stories, because it inherently plays into the release schedule of, like, a comic book, you know, the monthly release, or the, you know, the day to day of a soap opera. As someone who's watched many Young and the Restless, there is a clear connection with X-Men the soap opera, and I think it just serves them so well, especially that time to let characters flourish and grow and be featured week to week and have their own episodes, things like that. Yeah. I hope if you've listened to this, you already have seen the series, but if you haven't, go check it out, you dork. What are you doing? I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. I will definitely be talking about episodes 6 through 10 when they come out. I love it. It makes me so happy. I'm actually literally going to, after this, go read some more X-Men comics, because I love the X-Men. They're the best. They mean a lot to me. I love them. Also, my standouts for the season have been Magneto, Storm, and my boy, my favorite X-Men, my goat, my king. I love me a blue Boy Scout, and that is what Scott Summers is and more. Cyclops has been my favorite X-Men character I love him so much. He has done so very well. Shout out Ray Chase. Thank you so much, sir. You're doing a great job as Cyclops. I love him. Finally, I will let you people jump on the Cyclops bandwagon. I am letting you jump on the Cyclops bandwagon. Y'all did him dirty for years. Y'all said some mean things. I forgive, but I don't forget, okay? You can come on to the Cyclops bandwagon, but remember, I let you come on to the Cyclops bandwagon because I have been a day one Cyclops boy. Scott Summers, my ruby quartz glasses wearing king. Cyclops is the best X-Men. That's a statement. That's not an opinion. That is fact. That is gospel. And that's all I have to say on that. Thank you so much for listening to this edition of Not Just A Geek. You can follow the show and all the ongoings of any of my creative endeavors at Creative Endeavors. There we go. At NJAGPROD. That is NJAG Prod. That's on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. If you want to follow me on my personal stuff, you can follow me at Garrett Briones, GarrettBriones on Instagram, or at GarrettSBriones on Twitter. Thank you, Stephen Cruz, for the Not Just A Geek theme. I have been your host, Not Just A Guy, the guy, Garrett Briones, and I will talk at you next time.